I'm here with Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of the Duran. Alexander, I'm not sure when was the last time we did an update on the UK and Brexit after the elections. I don't think we've done a video since the elections, actually. We did the elections, we did a live, and we haven't covered it since. So it's been a couple of weeks since those historic elections took place. And Brexit, now that 2019 is closing out and 2020 is right around the corner. We've got Boris Johnson's Brexit, not a full Brexit, like a lot of our viewers wanted, and I personally would have liked to have seen. But we got some sort of Brexit, the Boris Brexit, so to speak, coming end of January, to be more precise. So, Alexander, what is the update? What's going on in the UK? What's going on with Boris Johnson? And what's going on with Brexit?
Yeah, let's actually focus first on Brexit, because I think that's the thing that obviously, and for obvious reasons, attracts the major international attention. I mean, Boris Johnson, as we remember, in the run-up to the election, before the election, took the entire political world here in Britain by surprise by doing this deal, which he got basically brokered by Emmanuel Macron, and which he negotiated with the Irish Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, whereby the British essentially are able to shift away from the customs union and the single market further away than Theresa May had intended, and won't be trapped into those two institutions by Theresa May's Irish backstop, which said that that could never happen. They could never walk away from them unless there was some sort of overarching agreement with the Republic of Ireland to keep the and the European Union to keep the border between the north of Ireland, Northern Ireland, and the south of Ireland, and the Republic of Ireland, open. So Johnson got round that by instead creating what is in effect a customs barrier down the Irish Sea, which keeps Northern Ireland more tightly integrated economically in some ways now with the Irish Republic than with the rest of the United Kingdom. Anyway, he got this deal done. He fought the election. He fought and won the election on one issue, which is Brexit. He said repeatedly, incessantly, and all the time that his policy was to get Brexit done. His deal has now passed the first reading in the House of Commons, where he got a majority of over 100. It will certainly come into law, and Britain will definitely leave the European Union's political structures on the 31st of January. So that side of it is now resolved. There has to be a further negotiation because the deal is intended to be only a temporary arrangement towards a more permanent full-term arrangement. And this is where it begins to get very interesting, because what Boris Johnson says is that he will negotiate and agree with the European Union this final deal in 2020. And he's proposing to pass legislation saying that that will be law. So in theory, what that means is that if this deal, this last and final deal, this trade deal between Britain and the European Union is not agreed by the end of 2020, then Britain will leave the European Union, or having already left the European Union, will be left with no trade deal. The deal he's just negotiated will fall by the way, and we will be in a no-deal clean-cut Brexit. So it's coming back in a somewhat different form. Now, does Boris Johnson mean it? Is this law that he's proposing to pass really, for real? I say proposing to pass. He will pass it. There's no way the Conservative Party is going to resist this now. Does he really mean it? Will there be a deal agreed in 2020? Of course, if there isn't a deal agreed in 2020, he can presumably still repeal his own law. But it is very interesting that he's trying to box himself in this way. And one wonders what the real agenda is.
What is the real agenda?
I mean, well, we don't know.
Are you saying that we may actually have a much truer Brexit?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's now suddenly looking possible again because of the way in which, as I said, he's talking about legislating for Britain to finish this deal, this negotiation with the European Union by the end of 2020. Now, I ought to say, if you read the British media, if you read the sort of more pro-European part of the British media, if you read the Financial Times, for example, they will all tell you it can't be done. It's far too complicated. Negotiations like this take years. There's no conceivable way that it can all be agreed and done and dusted in a single year. I disagree. I think that it both can be done and it probably will be done. I don't think that Johnson's agenda ultimately is, well, let's call it again, a no-deal Brexit. I don't think that's what he's ever been about. The big question is, if he's determined to meet his deadline, who is going to give first? Will it be the European Union, which does want to have some kind of trading arrangement with Britain because Germany does not want to lose access or free access to the British market, or will it be Britain? We will see. But certainly, it's a strong play from Johnson, and one wonders whether he's thought it all through.
Do you think he's thought it all through? I mean, what are the risks that you think?
I don't think he has actually.
Things can come from this move?
Well, what bad things can come from this move? The worst thing that can happen, in my opinion, because I mean, Brexit is going to happen in some form. There's two possibilities. Let's unpack it and unravel it. There are three possibilities. Firstly, the deal is not concluded within a year. Johnson is humiliated and is forced to, because he doesn't really want a no-deal Brexit, is forced to repeal his own legislation and negotiate again. I think in that case, I mean, he will survive as prime minister, but he will be badly damaged and he will lose a lot of face across the country. That's one possibility. Possibility two, which I have to say I think is the most likely, deal in some form is done. And I'm going to guess that it is Johnson who's setting himself these deadlines that actually puts the greater pressure on him, and he will agree a free trade agreement which is more favourable to the EU than perhaps might have been the case if he'd taken the time to negotiate it over a longer period. Possibility three, the European Union caves. There is an economic recession in Germany, which is very likely, and the Germans decide that, you know, they can't risk losing being denied full access to the British market. So they come up with some kind of free trade agreement, you know, Canada plus or Norway plus, and it's cobbled together very fast, and Boris Johnson becomes, you know, comes out of it the winner. Or Boris Johnson means exactly what he says. The European Union doesn't realise it. The negotiation becomes bogged down. Johnson refuses to repeal his law, and we find ourselves in a no-Brexit position at the end of next year. I think the last possibility is the least likely by far. I think there will be a deal done. On balance, I think the political imperative for Johnson to do the deal is greater than for the European Union to do the deal. And I think it will therefore be one that tilts it further in the European Union's favour. That's my guess.
I wonder if Macron has his hands a little bit in this, in that he senses a weaker Germany, in a way, a weaker Merkel, the recession. And he's kind of, you know, nudging Boris to say, you know what? You know, strike it, Merkel a little bit here. You have some wiggle room to get some concessions from Germany in order to embarrass Merkel in a way.
I think that's entirely right. I mean, one should point out that Macron's position is not incredibly strong. I mean, he has a major crisis underway in France. I mean, you've got railway strikes and and all kinds of strikes going on in France at the moment. But at the same time, he is president. He is the elected president of France and is going to be there for a while, whereas Merkel is looking increasingly shaky and seems to be rapidly losing her grip. So this is Macron's possibility, further possibility, to weaken Merkel. Now, the Germans have always relied to some extent on the British to balance out the French, whilst Germany and France are the key drivers within the European Union. The Germans have always had a good relationship with Britain, and they've always, to some extent, been able to play the British and the French off against each other. With Britain completely outside, and with Boris Johnson now having this understanding with Macron, it's quite possible that Macron is both leveraging the British away, ending, as I said, this axis, this German-British axis, which puts him in a stronger position, and also weakening Merkel further by getting Merkel into a position where she's going to possibly upset German industry, which is going to be very, very concerned if it loses its access to the British market.
And finally, Alexander, what is Labour saying about all of this? What is
Well,
Farage saying about all of this in the Brexit Party?
we're not hearing very much of Farage at the moment, and I think he's waiting. But Labour is, of course, at the moment in the middle of a complicated process of trying to sort out what it's going to do. They're looking to elect a new leader. Great uncertainty as to who that will be. There's factional infighting between the Blairites and the Corbynites as to who will take the Labour Party forward. And the Labour Party, to many people, surprised, though not to mine, decided that they would vote against Boris Johnson's deal when it came up for the say for his first reading. And so they again voted against it, which actually I think they had to do because, I mean, they fought the election saying that it was a bad deal. It would have been crazy immediately after the election for them to completely change direction and suddenly say that they were going to support the deal after all. So, I mean, I don't think they had any option about that. But whoever the new leader is, the Labour Party, if it is going to move forward, I think it now has to internalise the fact that Brexit has happened and it's not going away. I think that has to be what the Labour Party has to do if they're going to have any chance of winning back all those seats they lost in the north of England and in the English Midlands. So I think there are some people within the Labour Party who understand this. Unfortunately, or well, unfortunately for the Labour Party, there are still some people who are resisting that logic and who still insist that the right thing for Labour to have done would have been to take an all-out Remain position in the election. I think that would have been an even bigger, that would have resulted in an even bigger defeat for the Labour Party than the one they got. So, they've still got a lot of thinking and manoeuvring to do. But I do want to make one observation, which I think a lot of people in Britain, but even more people in the US should not be, I think, over-influenced by some of the things that they read in the British newspapers. The Labour Party has suffered a defeat. It's far and away from being the worst defeat it's suffered. I mean, it won a third of the votes in the election. It held on to most of its seats. It is still a powerful electoral force, and the claim that it, had its worst defeat since 1935 is on the basis of the percentage of the votes it won, simply not true. It did worse in the elections of 2010 and 2015, which were fought by the two leaders, Gordon Brown and Ed Miliband, who preceded Corbyn. Corbyn actually won a higher percentage of the votes than those two leaders did. And he actually won more votes, more actual physical votes, than Tony Blair did in the election of 2005. So Labour is not out, you know, of the running by any means, but it's got to internalise and accept the fact that Brexit is going to be done.
Sounds to me that Labour has some housekeeping.
Oh, they've got enormous amount of work to do. They've got to sort themselves out and reorganise themselves. I mean, of that there's no question at all. And they've got to decide which direction they're going. I should make it very clear, by the way, that whatever direction they take, the one direction which I think it would be a big mistake would be to go back to Blairism. I mean, I think if you go back to Blairism, which means basically triangulation, Clinton-like triangulation, and loyalty to regime change wars and to the Euro-Atlantic system, I think they will never get those seats in the north of England and the east English Midlands back. And I think they will lose a lot of the support they won under Corbyn from younger middle-class voters all over the country. So I think that would certainly be a big mistake for them. But, you know, we'll see. The Labour Party has a genius for getting things wrong.
All right, Alexander McCurs, Editor-in-Chief of the Durand. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell. Look for us on iTunes and SoundCloud for an audio copy of this podcast. Please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really means a lot to us. And look for this video on duranvideo.com and on bitchute.com. We post all our videos on those two platforms. Download the Telegram app as well to keep in touch with everything going on at the Durand community. Telegram on the iTunes Store and on Google Play. Download that app and also go to the Durand shop. Pick up some magic mugs, pick up some magic shirts. Use DRN20 for a 20% discount. And we also have two new ebooks coming out as well, Alexander.
We certainly do. And can I just say, I mean, ebooks is something that we are really looking to develop and expand, because this is something which we think enables us to put all our various thoughts and ideas on particular topics together. We've dealt in this in these two ebooks with two of the most topical issues that have come up: the Ukraine gate, impeachment, hoax, nonsense, whatever you want to call it. But you know, we've discussed it at great length in our videos, and we put them together in a book. And I've also written a preface, trying to pull it all together and explain it to our viewers. And then the other, I think, huge story, which isn't getting anywhere near the sort of attention it deserves and merits, and which is now paradoxically being more widely covered in Britain than in the United States, even though it is a US story ultimately. And that's the Epstein scandal. I mean, we're talking a great deal in this. We've talked a lot in our videos about the Epstein scandal. We've had problems, by the way, getting our views out, because we've discovered that, you know, social media providers don't seem to be very keen on discussions of the Epstein story. But anyway, we've put it together. We've put our videos together. And again, I provided a preface to discuss certain aspects of the Epstein story and to discuss what a very, very strange and creepy individual Epstein was. Creepy, I mean, beyond the fact that he was a monster and a criminal of the worst sort, but he was a very strange and mysterious man. And also the extraordinary curtain of silence that some people are trying to draw down over the whole affair. That in itself was a reason, by the way, for us to publish our books. So go to our shop and find our books. And you can also go to our shop and find on our magic mugs, our famous magic mugs, which are making such a huge impact. I say that because we're getting enormously rave reviews about how wonderful these mugs are. And so we should, because they are wonderful mugs. They are 15 ounces. They are made of porcelain, beautiful, light, strong porcelain. They don't chip or break. I've had mine now for almost a year, and they are literally, absolutely as good as new. You wouldn't know that they'd been used. And I, you know, I use them constantly and all the time. And they are extraordinarily beautiful and wonderful mugs to have. And can I just say, one of the nice things about selling magic mugs is that I met recently in Fortnum and Mason's Mr. Ian Puddick, who follows the Duran, and told me that he bought many of our magic mugs. And in return, of course, I had to buy his gin, which is Old Bakery gin, a gin which he distills himself. I'd say the best gin in England. And gin is the English drink. It's the Scots drink whiskey. We drink in England, we drink gin. It's made to, I believe, a 19th century formula. It used to be sold illicitly, but of course he sells it, as you can imagine, entirely legally. And it is such a good gin that, as the bottle says, it's supplied to Buckingham Palace and to the Foreign Office and to the Victorian Albert Museum and to Lancaster House, where world leaders, including, you know, Donald Trump, when he comes, you know, if they want gin, that's the gin they will get. No doubt it's the gin that James Bond now uses in his martinis, which was, well, he puts vodka sometimes, but in the original one it was gin and vodka, shaken and not stirred, as we know. So wonderful gin, and thank you, Ian, and I'm glad you appreciate and like your mugs and that you support the Duran. And of course, we don't just have mugs, we have marvelous shirts like the one I'm wearing now, 100% cotton, incredibly comfortable, with a Duran double-headed eagle there. We've got marvelous polo shirts, which I've worn many times and which are now in my suitcase waiting to go with me to the Alps. We've also got hoodies, hats, stickers, long sleeve t-shirts, which I will also be taking with me to the Alps to remain warm in the sub-zero temperatures I expect to find there. So we've got all these wonderful things in our shop. DRN20, as Alex said, is the discount code. So this is still the time to buy presents, not just for your friends and family, but also for yourself. So what are you waiting for? Help the Duran. Help your friends, help your family, help yourself. Come to our shop, DRN20. Alex will tell you how to do
TheDuranShop.com. Just put in DRN20 on the checkout page and you'll get 20% off all merchandise on the Duran Shop. Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of The Duran, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.